Kim.
Kim.
And you're from?
Timonium.
Isn't that
Baltimore?
Plant. Isn't that a plant?
Let's hear it.
Thanks.
Kim.
My name's Kim. I'm an addict.
I'd
like to thank my friends for coming here. They've been shopping all day. I'm sure they're tired. I always tell them, you don't have to come. They come. They're so kind and loving to me. Thank the committee for inviting me. I swim with the program chair person. What is she? Programming. Yeah, Rashima in the summer. So lucky me, first three traditions. And I don't know. I'd much rather do something more exciting, love and lust, or, you know, living clean and living dirty, or something with some drama to it. But I guess it's a sign of maturity and growth when you get asked to speak on their traditions, right? We'll see. yeah, the first three. She's like, what traditions? I'm in the wrong meeting. No, you're right in the right place. Anyway, also one more thing. I thank my husband, in case he ever hears this tape, because he's wonderful, and he stayed home with our three kids over the weekend. There's a little drama around that. The weekend's good. Saturday and Sunday is about family time, but I had to miss work on Friday and Monday. He was shocked. He's like, Monday? You come back Monday? What do you mean? You know? But he graciously let me go. So I want to thank him for being so wonderful. Gosh. All right. I'm just going to share on the tradition a little bit of experience I got. I'll tell you what they are, at least. I did do my homework. I love our literature. I'm usually not a quoter except for stuff I live and I know in my life, but the traditions are a little difficult. So if I open my book, just be patient with me. Tradition one is our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on NA unity. And you know, what that means to me is unity is about the good of the group, the good of Narcotics Anonymous, and putting that in front of your own personal desires and what you want. I guess the spiritual principles in that would be surrender and acceptance. It talked about in here about how unity comes to play, too, like when we not only work together, because you read the traditions, you automatically think business meetings and group consciences and that type of stuff, but it talked about how we form unity with our families by doing campouts together and, you know, dances and the other stuff that we have in Narcotics Anonymous that helps us get to know each other. All right, probably be a short meeting. Tradition two. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Everybody loves that part when they read it, like in the opening meetings. They do not govern slaves and all that kind of stuff. But trusted servants are just that, trusted servants. And I personally trust our servants. I don't know if I've always felt like that. I think once you do something, you have more compassion and empathy for other people who do it. And I've had extensive work in service. I helped start an area a long time ago in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, the capital area. And then I've worked on several subcommittees, on conventions, and it just gets easier. I mean, when I used to come into something, I would think, you know, what about me and why isn't this the way I want it and all that kind of stuff. But when you serve, you come in and you think, thank you so much for setting up the chairs. Thank you for making the coffee. You know, you think about all the decisions that go behind the speakers, that go behind all the stuff that makes this stuff work. I mean, people spend huge amounts of time. Benefit, it keeps you clean. Huge, huge for me. I mean, I learned so much in service about who I was, helped me to show up for a long time, made me feel good about who I was. I mean, they gave me a key, you know, they let me write minutes on the computer and I sent them to people, whatever it was. I felt like I was useful and I was valuable, and that was, you know, a part of my personal recovery. You know, this tradition, I think, speaks to are being trusted servants and everybody having a say in the group. Like a lot of times, like we'll have a car workshop with my home group, and we have the, what are they called, like the new people that just joined the home group and they haven't been around for 16 years. And sometimes I see some of the issues and I want to think they can't vote on that. They have no idea what that's about. You know, but I really believe when it talks about that a loving God expressing himself through our group conscience, that they have some very valuable information to say. Sometimes they can take things out of a perspective where the person who knows all the information misses it because they're logically thinking instead of with their heart. And a newcomer will pipe up and say something, you're like, wow, I never thought about it like that, you know? It also, for me, means that I don't always get my way when I think that I know what's right, because I'm a pretty good talker sometimes, and I'd like to try to convince the group to go my way with what I think. Recently, there came some good literature down in that car report, and I was real excited about it, and my group didn't like it. And I was like, I tried to be so patient, I was biting my lip, and I was, you know, and I let it go. You know, because I know that, you know, I'm not the boss. I'm not in charge. You know who I am in charge of, though, is me. You know, because sometimes, like with that whole trusted servant, some people want to come around here and tell other people what to do. And that's not how I believe Narcotics Anonymous works. I can suggest, and if someone actually asks me, what do you think? I still try to say, well, my experience is. I can't tell people, you know, that, you know, energy drinks are... that's using or that's not good for you. That my thing is I don't drink energy drinks. That's just me. And my experience is I came in here with nothing. No self-esteem, no dignity, no job, no place to live. I hated myself. I wanted to die, and I was putting needles in my arm every day and prostituting myself. Okay, you ready for the flip? I live in a beautiful home. I've been married 10 years to the most wonderful guy in the world. I have 3 beautiful children I love and I raise. I'm involved in the PTA. I'm involved in other activities in my community. I feel good about who I am. I wake up, I'm happy, joyous, and free. And to me, an energy drink ain't worth the risk. That's just me. I don't go to bars. I don't do karaoke. And if someone asks me, I'll tell that. I sponsor people who drink energy drinks, and I love them and hug them. And if they ask me, I'll tell them. But where are you going with all this? I'm just saying that our trusted servants, that we just have to show people by what we do and not tell them what to do. And let God express himself. God is like amongst us. He's with us. My experience is he's with us and he's in us. And if I just slow down long enough and shut up, usually he'll come out and say whatever's supposed to be said. So, and it said that in a book. It said, if I use my ears more than my mouth, I'm probably working this tradition. I like that. And tradition 3 says our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on, that's one. This one's my favorite. See, I'm all mixed up. This one's the favorite one I liked. It said, the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop using. I like that one a lot. I think a long time ago, if it was NA history, I'd tell you, it used to say honest desire, I think a long, long time ago. But they took that out because there's no way really, I think, to measure that. One of the quotes that I remember that the book said was that a desire is not a measurable commodity. I really like that. And I have a little bit of experience when I read this was one time I had a friend and I went to pick her up in the city to take her to the meeting. And unfortunately, when I got there, she was already high. And she was on the step, and she was nodded out, and it was not a nice neighborhood. And I said, come on, we're going to the meeting. I didn't know what else to say, man. So we went to the meeting, and she spilled her coffee, and some people got pissed off and yelled at me and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, she eventually overdosed and died, and I ain't got no regrets because I brought her to the meeting. You know, and I think that, you know, my self-centeredness is what kicks in when I see someone high in a meeting. I go to me. Why can't I do that? They look happy, or they make me uncomfortable, or what if they say something stupid? You know, something like that, all about me. And that's not what the program's supposed to be about. It's supposed to be about me loving other people. How can I help them? What can I do? You know, if they're in a meeting, as far as I'm concerned, high or not, they got a desire, or they wouldn't have came there. I had a desire to stay clean long before I got clean. clean. I just didn't know how. Speaking of desire to get clean, I had a desire to stop stealing, and I couldn't do it. When I first got here, for my first couple years, I was off the hook. I had a desire to stop being promiscuous. You think it's fun to be in a circle with a whole bunch of men and know you slept with half of them? That's no fucking fun. You know, I had a desire, but I didn't know how to change. I didn't know what to do. This is who I was. I hated who I was, and I was trying to fix myself any way I could. You know, and I was stuck in that circle thinking that that behavior was going to change how I felt, only to do it and hate myself more, stuck in the circle, and I couldn't get out. It took a long time. It took a lot of women loving me and caring about me. It took God is really what it took, is because I was unopened to have a God of any of my understanding. And I fumbled around in here for a long time, and most people were pretty kind to me, and they loved me. And, you know, I'm grateful for that. I think this tradition's mainly just about being tolerant. You know, I understand the good of the group, though. Also, like, my home group says, if you use today, please don't share during a meet and pull someone up after the meeting. And I struggled a little with that because I know the newcomer is the most important person. But at the same time, I think there's a lot of other new people in the group who are looking for some kind of message of recovery and how to stay clean. And if you're high, really, you can't give that. So I do kind of like work with that statement. But at the same time, I try to zone in on who they are at my home group and talk to them after the meeting, you know. And a lot of my experience of who I am today took a really long time. You know, it took a really long time for, you know, I know I was one of the people after the meeting for a long time who would go with my friends and talk about me. You know, and there's nothing wrong with that. They call it cliques. I call it networks. You know what I'm saying? We need people to help us. But today, most days, I go to my home group, and this is a joy and an honor. I go to my home group because I want to help somebody and love somebody else. That's big shit, man. I'm self-centered most of the time. I've been self-centered my whole life. To think that way is just totally weird, you know, and it's taken a long time, but I'm grateful that God's like kind of washed my brain in that area, that I could try to love others, just because I get so much from it. Really, I guess it's kind of like a, what do they call that, a paradox or irony, you know what I'm saying? You love other people and you get all the love back. Mm-hmm. Pass me that water, would you? Thanks, Todd. Ugh. Anyway, I like that tradition. 3. You know, I think the third tradition does imply drugs, though. The only the requirement for membership is a desire to stop using. They're talking about drugs, so it's out there. Some people say it's not about the drugs. You ever hear people say that? They get a lot of clean time. They're like, well, it's not about the drugs. Well, put one in you? Oh, that's a bad message. That's it. But for me, it's always about the drugs, you know, because I can change anything about myself with the help of God and my sponsor and other people, like I was talking about the steal and the being promiscuous. All that stuff can change. But if I use, I don't have a guarantee that I'm going to make it back here and that I'll be able to stay clean to change anything. So I always keep, it's always about the drugs. It's always about not picking up. I don't think about it that much anymore, only because, like, the longer I think I stay clean, like, my thought pattern has changed. Some people say you can't change how you think, but I think you can, a little bit. The disease is still real big and powerful, don't get me wrong, and it can get you. But some of the ways I've changed how I think is to hang around people who think good, one of the things, and, like, fill your life with lots of positive things. Like, in the beginning, I used to stay home, and I would call off work and watch soap operas and eat ice creams and pull down the shades and not answer the phone. And I'd be like, wonder why I don't have a healthy relationship. So today I do things a little differently with that, and I filled my life with lots of positive things and just loving others and taking care of kids, and I don't know, I don't think that much about use, and I'm very grateful, although it has come. Thoughts do come sometimes, but I try not to give them a whole lot of space in my head. How many more minutes? I'm going to have to talk about something different. Really? Yay!
I have no idea.
Aw, man.
It was just laying here.
No. All right, I'm going to just talk about something else then. Let's talk about relationships. You timing me?
No.
Are you?
No.
Well, you need to know when to hold that sign up.
You told me that.
Well, read your paper. Thanks, Kathy. I think I got
plenty of time to talk.
Girlfriends who keep me on track. I don't know. I guess the whole the unity thing got me thinking too about my personal life and how, in some respects, my family unit has to come first, and my personal like my happiness, somewhat to speak, depends on the happiness of the house and the community that I live in. I'm sure my husband would agree with that. He's told me before his happiness is directly proportional to my happiness. So, but sometimes it's just really hard to balance all that. He just celebrated 16 years of recovery on the 16th, and I'm in recovery, and then we have three kids, one who is very challenging, and it just is a very difficult balance sometimes to maintain all that. Raising kids is the hardest thing I've ever done in my whole life. It's very rewarding, but it's also very challenging, and meeting all of their needs and taking care of the family unit in general and keeping our relationship intact has been a struggle. And a lot of times I have to step down with what I want to do and put what's the best thing for our family to do first. At least I try to do that sometimes. I'm not going home on Sunday, though. Don't get me wrong. Monday? What do you mean you're not coming home till Monday? Monday. Did I say it was a mess when I got here? I already share that part, because if I heard someone like me talk today about what my life was like, I might think that I didn't belong here if I was new. I got to Narcotics Anonymous in 86. I was 19 years old. I came here for free basin and smoking pot. I stayed clean for 3 years. I worked the program to the best of my ability, but I was young and I was cute, and I went to all the dances, and I didn't work any steps or change anything about myself. And in 3 years, I used. I had no God either. I did work some steps, like I said, to the best of my ability, but my experience has been that if you don't change and get a God, you'll use again. So I had when I used that time, I had reservations about shooting drugs. I didn't think I belonged here. I heard people talking about that in meetings, and I thought, well, maybe that's something I want to do. I was in a deep relapse mode. I got to Philadelphia with the guy I was seeing. I went to an abandoned house. I saw that stuff. I said, I don't want to do that, and he said, give me your arm. And I shot drugs in Philadelphia for, I guess, about maybe 6 months. I was in abandoned buildings with people with abscesses all over their arms, telling them how great Narcotics Anonymous was and how they could be happy and joyous, and they were pretty much telling me to sit the fuck down or get out. And God pretty much rescued me from that situation, just like one of them little claw machines. He picked me up one night. I could not make a good decision to save my life. He picked me up, he brought me to Narcotics Anonymous, and I stayed clean for another 3 years. I went to college. I learned how to balance a checkbook. Stayed out of some relationships a little bit, maybe, not really. And what else? I thought maybe I could drink when I went off to college. I knew free basin was bad, smoking pot didn't work, shooting drugs was definitely not for me, so I thought, well, maybe just this alcohol thing. How sick can you be? How much denial can you be in a meeting thinking about that kind of stuff, you know? So I decided that I was going to drink. I drank for, I guess, almost a year. I held my life together somewhat. And I realized that even though I wasn't doing the things I had done before, every morning when I woke up, I hated myself and I wanted to die. And I still had my life somewhat together. And I believe what it says in the book, and that is that we can't live with or without drugs. When I first read it, I thought it was a misprint. What do you mean we can't live with or without drugs? That doesn't make sense. But for me, it was the fact that I'm an addict. I know that to the core of my soul. It happened long before I ever even picked up drugs. I am an addict. My thinking, my behaviors, I'm an addict. I'm an addict. And the only treatment for me, the only hope for me is Narcotics Anonymous and the spiritual principles and becoming a God-centered, loving person. That's it. That's all I got. That's the only option I have for survival. I got clean. At that point, it was 94, and I realized, you know, at that point, I had really had no more reservations. I had tried everything that I thought that maybe I could manage, and I couldn't, and I broke down, and I was willing to get a God of my own understanding, because there was this one God that a lot of people in America like, and I thought, you know, if I don't pick him, I'm probably going to go to hell, and so I'm just not picking nobody. And then someone kindly pointed out in our basic text that it says that we could have a God of our own understanding. And I did that. And if I get to heaven and it's the wrong one, I'm going to be pissed off. No, that's not true. So I found them, like, out in nature. Like, I mean, I know there's some atheists and you can still come here. But, like, when you walk and you see, like, babbling brooks and birds and trees and grass, and then if you have a baby, you just know there's a God. No, you know, it's just like, you know, we can't think that stuff up, man. I know there's God, you know, and you can, my experience is that you can work at your own pace, you can come up with what works for you, you can ask other people, but I really believe in my life, my experience was I had to have a God. I needed to rely on someone besides the meeting and the people. If you're new and you're on step two, that's cool, man. The meetings are powerful. People are powerful. The literature, it can keep you clean. Even the dances and looking cute for a while, but eventually I had to find a God of my own understanding. And once I did, that was a whole turning point to my whole recovery. It really was. The stealing stopped. The being promiscuous stopped. All that stuff. I was able to let it go and trust God, and my life just totally changed at that point. I became very willing to do the steps and to go through the feelings of not, you know, crying and being sad maybe on a Sunday night because I didn't have a partner and I wanted, you know, some kind of relationship or something. I was sad some days. I cried. But you know how freeing it was to get up on Sunday morning and not have to take a cab home? Woo, Lordy. Those kind of things changed how I felt about myself, you know. I don't know. I was thinking about on the way down here. We recently went to dinner after a meeting, and I was talking with someone who, you know, didn't want to come to the convention because they knew they were just going to hook up with somebody and, you know, hate themselves pretty much, but still wanted to do it. And I was just feeling so grateful on my drive down here that that's not why I'm here this weekend, man. That's not why I'm here, man. I'm here to love other people, to find great joy and beauty. And it's beautiful outside. The sun is shining, feels so warm on your body. And then to see the waves crashing and feel the fresh air, I just know, you know, that there's a God. And I'm just so grateful that I've been able to stay clean and it's all been due to Narcotics Anonymous. So if you're new here, please just keep coming back. Tell somebody what you need and let them love you. And talk about what's going on with you. I know for me, I used to think I wanted to look good here. Now I want to look good in my real life. So I come in here and talk about what's really going on. Because I still got some crazy stuff going on between my ears. But I come in here and talk about it, and it gives me the freedom not to act on it in my real life. So if there's something going on with you, pull someone up and talk to them. And thank you for the sign, and thank you so much for listening to me.
Hi, I'm Michelle. I'm still an addict. I'd like to introduce our second speaker, and that's Todd T. I'm from Rock Creek area.
Testing. Sorry. I don't think I've spoken into a microphone for a very long time. Well, this is my first convention, first NA convention I've ever been to, first workshop I've ever been to. Yeah, thank you. It's great. It's great being here. Actually, thanks, Kim, for speaking. But right there at the end when you were talking about how beautiful it is, it's beautiful out. It's beautiful out. I've been spending time in the woods myself. I was out by the water today. It feels spiritual, you know, which is weird to me. That's not language. Even now, that's not language that I really use. But it's great being here, and it's great being around a bunch of addicts. I'm not really a traditions person, you know. I read the traditions. I sort of care about the traditions. I've experience in the group structure and all that. But I was really nervous, sort of nervous at the idea of speaking for a long time about, you know, organizational structure. So my temptation, as always, is to analyze. I'm very sort of an analytical person. But I also find that it doesn't get me very far. And the longer I stay clean, the more, rather the less importance I put on analysis or self-analysis or certainly analyzing the steps of the traditions. So I think I'm just going to talk about my own experience, my own desire, and you know, how God speaks to me, you know, in the rooms and all that. Towards the end of my using, for years before I came into Narcotics Anonymous, I had a desire. I don't know that I had a desire to be clean. Well, no. I know that I didn't have a desire to be clean. I had a desire not to use drugs, and I was very ashamed of my drug use, and for good reason, you know. And the last years of my, you know, the last 5 or 7 years of my using, you know, there was no, there wasn't any doubt to myself or anybody around me whether or not I was an addict. And it never occurred to me to try recovery. It's not something that I knew anything about. And what I would do, and it would get, you know, sort of wackier and wackier, but I would get on jobs, and I'd save up a little money, and I'd go out of town, and I would go out of town without the drug, without my drug of choice, and I would double down on all the drugs I didn't really like to get me through this week without my drug of choice. And then I would come back to town and I would score. Always. I'd always score, and I would always score with a suitcase in my hand before I got back home. And I did this for 4 years. And I was desperate. And I had not read the, in the book, I hadn't read the first three traditions for a while. And I honestly, I don't know that I've ever read them on my own. I know that I've read them in meetings. And yeah, it's the third one that really jumped out, this desire, the fact that that we only need a desire to be here. I know that when I did finally find the program, that I came in, at least from a layperson's perspective, I came in for all the wrong reasons, do you know? I was desperate. I was obsessively in love with somebody who was using, who was living out in D.C. I was in San Francisco, and there was another person who was going to NA meetings, but she was using, and she wanted me to come and be some sort of support for her. But really, I just wanted to start this relationship up with this guy who was using. And she somehow got my parents. I was not welcome at home. She talked my parents into helping me get into a rehab. And I went into this rehab with her frequent flyer miles. And I got clean so I could, move back to DC and live with this and live with this really messed up guy who was using and be support for this really messed up woman. Who was also using, and she got me to come in because she promised me. I don't need to get too much into the goriness of it. She promised me, and it's how she got me on the plane. But actually, she really meant it. She promised me that I could still smoke pot. I just shouldn't share about it in meetings. You know, which is messed up, you know. But I got to tell you, I don't want to get too far afield, you know, from the traditions, because at least when I think about it, it is about sort of unity, and unity is sort of what I found in meetings and what I found in 12-step recovery, and a lot of it's tied in, for me, tied into how I came in. I was living in San, when I came in, I was very desperate. I was living in San Francisco. I'd been on, between San Francisco and New York, I'd been on, like, the gay club circuit and gay bar circuit for a long time. I had no straight friends. It was really important to me. I got flown into this rehab. I got flown into this rehab in rural Pennsylvania. I was surrounded by people who never knew that they had, who didn't think they'd ever met a gay person before in their life. I was very uncomfortable around straight people. I was very uncomfortable around rural, you know, people who lived in rural areas. I was. And there was, and I was in shell shock. I'd been, you know, I'd been using, you know, on a daily basis for you know, well over a decade. And you know, this is the first time in 14 years that when I went into, that was the first time in 14 years that I didn't have drugs inside me. And I was in shell shock, and I was in an unfamiliar, place, surrounded by people who were so different from me. I was so upset. These people were so different. I was intimidated by them. I intimidated them. They were so unlike me, and I was so raw and so vulnerable and so confused. And then these people, like, reached out to me one by one. And these people, like these fly fishermen, would say these things. Things would come out of their mouths when I could listen, when my brain would slow down just a little bit. These things would come out of their mouths that sounded like things that had been locked up in my head for my whole life, that I had never been able to articulate. And it was overwhelming. For me, it was an overwhelming experience for me, being in a room with people who were superficially so different from me. Their lives were at different places. They were different. Most of the people, at first, most of the people were just getting clean, like I was. But it's still, you know, it's still, I get a little shaky when I talk about it. It had this amazing power. For me, and it really is the first time that I've felt, and I do think about it in terms of unity and love and stuff like this, where I felt this thing. I mean, I'm an atheist, and higher power speaks to me through this serendipity and through this the love and the common bonds that I have with addicts. I remember the first, I guess it was the first NA meeting. I didn't go to it. It was there. It was mostly an AA-based rehab. But every week they had an NA meeting come in there. And this NA meeting, and the AA meetings have been very big in rural Pennsylvania. This NA meeting comes there, and it's three people, okay? And the person who was speaking, I took one look at her and finally saw somebody who reminded me of myself. This woman looked like a mess, you know? And she was dressed sloppily, and she was, she just looked like a mess, you know? And she was a mess. And then she sat there and shared, and as it turned out, and again, this was an overwhelming experience for me. This woman had been up all night. She was a mother. She'd been up all night. Her child was sick. She'd rushed her child to the hospital. Had been up with this child all night long. And this is a morning meeting. And her child had stabilized like 2 hours previous. And she sat there with her child. And she had this commitment to come and talk. An H&I commitment to come and talk in this meeting. Do you know? And. She babbled a little. It was obvious she'd been up all night. But I was just together enough to be sort of dumbstruck that somebody would do something like this. You know, that somebody would during this sort of crisis in their lives, you know. I could not understand, I mean, unless she was a saint. She didn't look like a saint. You know, she reminded me of myself. And, you know, I'm not a saint. I wasn't a saint. And she was there honoring her commitment, and she was just sort of talking about it, do you know? And I couldn't articulate it at the time, but I admired it so much, and I really sort of wanted what she had. And I think that these, for me, when I think back and think about desire, is I think that that was one of the, that was a point where I started to want to be clean and want to be in recovery, and where I recognized, and this is, you know, this is like at a week clean or something like this, where I recognized that it wasn't just that I, you know, didn't want to use drugs, that I had a desire for something like what this woman had, to be the kind of person that this woman was. I got kicked out of rehab. I still stayed clean. I immediately went back to D.C. and cut ties with these two crazy people. It took me about 3 days, but the sort of the using people that I'd gotten clean to be around, they were using, and I was very shaky. I didn't have the faith or clarity to say, well, they're using, I shouldn't be around them. It just made me feel unsteady. Everything made me feel unsteady, but it made me really feel unsteady, and I was really afraid of going back out. It had been very important to me that I go to only gay meetings, and I'd made these rules for myself before I got clean and when I was in rehab, that I was only going to go to gay meetings. And that lasted for all of that, well, longer than 3 days. That lasted for about a week, do you know? And I, you know, it was D.C., so there are plenty of gay meetings. And it's just not... They were okay. In fact, the first meeting I went to outside of rehab was great. It was an anniversary meeting. It was an anniversary meeting, and these people seemed so happy. And again, the people, there was a man named Franklin that I have never seen since, and that was a long time ago. He shared, and there was a man named Alan, and he was the chair. And it's just like tattooed on my memory is the good feeling in this meeting. And it was Franklin's first year. And they all knew each other, and they all loved each other, and it was so obvious, and they were so happy. And on one level, I couldn't connect, because that's not where my head was at, but on a deep level, I had such a desire to be part of it. And the people weren't anything like me either, you know, as it turns out. But I got so much for it. Also, as it turns out, the people who reached out to me in NA were not gay people. They were not in gay meetings. And very quickly, and it had a lot to do with my experiences at this rehab, getting clean, very quickly I gravitated towards meetings that were filled with all different kinds of people, some of whom I liked, some of whom intimidated me, some of whom I just... really didn't like, and I couldn't tell you why. But there are all sorts of people. And there's something about the process of, not the process of just tolerating these people, there's something about the process, and it took me a long time to thaw out. There's something about, for me, there's something about listening to somebody who I don't really like, who, for whatever reasons, I don't really respect, and really trying to listen to them, and then getting something out of what they're saying, do you know? And it sounds sort of simple and sounds like nothing, but this is, I guess this is over the first year of my recovery, getting to the point where I could do that, that was a big, not only was that a big deal and a milestone in my recovery, that was, it was like a beautiful thing, you know? For me, it's a really beautiful thing, and it's where a lot of the beauty of recovery comes from. And that has been a priority in my recovery since then, is that I'm not surrounded by people who are just like me. That I'm not surrounded by people who are just like me. I want to talk a little bit about where I'm at now. And I had gotten into a relationship with somebody who was not in the program. Somebody who's probably not an addict, but who's still pretty toxic. And I did, you know, I was in a relationship for 7 years, and we moved farther and farther away from the city, and I very much got out of the habit of going to NA. I never felt like I wasn't in NA anymore. And And actually, I felt like I was an active NA member just because I knew I was in NA, you know, just because it was inside me, you know. Even though I wasn't really going to meetings. The relationship ended, and during, I guess it's a year and a quarter, year and a half, I've just thrown myself back into meetings again, and it's been stupendous. It's been stupendous to me, to the feeling to recommit to the fellowship. I know that doesn't necessarily, you know, I don't know how that ties into the first three traditions, except that one of the things that I've done, except for me, it's unity and, well, for me, a lot of it's desire. But one thing that I have done is take a service at, do service at area level. And I had been a GSR before, and I hated it. I hated area service. I thought there were a lot of personalities there, a lot of personality over principle. I just found it sort of confounding. But the opportunity sort of presented myself. I think I went to a workshop with an addict just because she was going, and it wasn't a workshop I was interested in. But, you know, I'm back in this sort of, not just take suggestions, but be open-minded thing. So I got invited to a workshop, and I went to a workshop, and then somebody at the workshop, you know, just heard that I needed that I was looking for a service, and suggested that I take this open position at area. And I knew that I knew I'd sort of hate it. You know, I knew I didn't like area so much. And I got to tell you, I still don't like service on an area level so much. However, I think it's important. Do you know? I think it's important to the. Let me backtrack a little. Do I have plenty of time left? I assume? Yeah. Let me backtrack a little. And again, for me, it speaks about the process, and it speaks about diversity. About 3 weeks, 3-4 weeks before this happened, somebody had shown up to a meeting that's the closest I have to a home group. And it's somebody I'd seen before who'd always annoyed me a little bit and this sort of thing. And he proceeded to, he got up and he shared, and he shared about how few people in our area do service at an area level. And he went on, and actually it got to the point where I felt harangued and insulted. And I ended up feeling very sort of offended at the share, but I had to admit that, you know what, that people really don't, that I don't, do you know? And it's one of these things like, it really bugged me. What he said really bugged me. His tone really bothered me. But I thought about it. And to be honest, I got to this point where I felt like I wanted to do service, where I wanted to do service on an area level. That even though the information had sort of gotten to me, or the seed was planted in me in a way that I bristled at, I had in my eye. I felt like it was like eating spinach, and I felt that it was good for the area and good for the program for people to do area service. So I recognized that my life was at a point where I was willing to do something I didn't want because I thought it would be good for me and because I thought it would just be a good thing to do, and I'm not always in those positions. So my feeling is if I know that I'm at that point in my life where I'm willing to take something on and commit to something that I doubt I'm going to actually enjoy, that I should just do it. And so I have service at an area level. And I still find area service to be, too much of it is about personalities rather than principles in my experience. I'm not particularly good at the position I have. I'm not good with policy, and I'm not, you know, the points of order and all that, and I don't really have a mind for it, but I'm adequate, do you know? And the thing is, I made a commitment, and I show up, and I do the best that I can, and that's good enough. And honestly, for me, there's a lot of, and I do, for me, it's good for me to do things that I don't excel at, and it's good for me to be honest that I'm not the bee's knees, and that it's good for me to acknowledge that I don't have to be, you know. I just I show up and I do the best that I can. And that might be all I have. I hope you got something out of it, first three traditions-wise, unity and desire-wise. That's all I have. Thanks for listening.